Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
This is the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We had some very good guests in today. Frank Skinner was here. He's touring and got some big gigs coming up in London's busy West End. He was on good form.
That was fun. Warren Gatland,
yeah. Just fresh from the Rugby World Cup. He's just obviously left the Wales job to go back home and coach at club level. And he's still got the Lions to come. He was very interesting, reflecting on the World Cup.
We had a bit of a VAR rant.
We had a bit of a laugh as well. And we brought you Don't Ask Me. And did Andy get 5 out of 5? What do you think? Here it all is.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. That's it. I'm done with VAR. I'm done with it. I'm done with Riley. He's got to go.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. It's pathetic. I've now got to the point, honestly, I swear, sitting in the stadium on Saturday, watching Chelsea's 2 goals,
yeah,
I just didn't celebrate the goal. I don't celebrate now. I thought, Abraham's offside. They'll look at that. Second one, I thought, well, that's probably somebody's handled it or something obscure about 5 moves ago. You know, and so what happens I do now? I've got a new routine. It went down pretty well. I wait until the other team have kicked off, which signals that the VAR check is over and it's a goal. And I go, go! Like that. I start celebrating like mad then.
What, even? Okay, really?
Yeah, it's good. It got a good laugh. It's the right thing to do because you can't celebrate when the goal goes in. It's pathetic.
Well, on the flip side of that, of course, I witnessed a 4-minute wait for a big toe to be offside for Sheffield United.
That was a disgrace.
And I told you at the time, I was letting you know, it was going on and on and on. And then at the end of it, do you know sometimes you get the better end of a VAR decision there? You know, it was a home game at Spurs, but there was no explosion of joy. There was a few people, but generally we all thought that's appalling. And the Sheffield United fans started questioning the validity of VAR, but only with two words, and it was pretty straightforward, old school Anglo-Saxon. But we started applauding. All the Tottenham fans applauded them as they sung it. I mean, I think if there's one thing that's bringing football fans together at the moment, it's the state of that. It was a ludicrous
it's so bad
decision.
I mean, the Mail on Sunday have revealed that there is a major flaw with the technology, which means there could be a margin of error of up to 38 centimetres, 15 inches.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's understandable because this thing of when the ball leaves the foot, and especially, you know, such a small margin like a toenail like that, they're going to have to introduce a margin of error. Here. They're going to have to introduce a situation where they go, we'll go with a decision on the field.
You can't, as I said to you earlier, you can't have a margin of error when you've got technology. When you're drawing.
Yeah, the technology's got a flaw, and it's like cricket with the ball tracking. You can't tell exactly. So they get this thing, umpires call. You have to have that in a review system. This is just.
It's quite hard to have umpires call when the umpires or referees aren't looking at the monitors.
I wouldn't even bother with it now. I'd just scrap it. And the whole thing's a disaster. They'll have to soldier on to the end of the season.
Thing is,
I thought Steve Parrish's piece in the Sunday Times yesterday was ridiculous. I didn't understand it at all. I mean, it was basically saying that everybody's biased and nobody can make a decision unless you're completely objective. I mean, that I had no skin in the game between Man City and Liverpool yesterday. I can make an objection, an observation.
Objective decision.
It was a penalty.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, there are two great pictures, actually, of Trent Alexander with his arms out, one hand handling the ball and the other standing in front of Raheem Sterling. I thought perhaps he's like Murray. Perhaps that's the position of his arms the whole time in an unnatural position.
Well, from what he said after the game, even he thought it was a penalty, didn't he? I mean, you could tell he was worried.
In the end, Oliver is a better referee than John Moss.
Yeah.
So Moss should have a bit of respect, and he should say to Oliver, go and look at it. I think it is, but you decide. You go and look at it. And until they get that, no one's going to be happy. I don't care what Riley says about it, they can go there. We all know they're not allowed to go there. And it's got to change. And really, it is actually ruining the season.
Yeah.
It's as bad as that.
It is terrible. No, you're right. On a more positive note, Sheffield United were fantastic. Seeing them in the flesh for the first time, what a brilliant job Chris Wilder has done. They were by far the better team on the day.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got no stars in the team. They've just come up. They're still getting used to the Premier League. They're
brilliantly coached.
What a great side they are. They play good football. They don't just, you know, often teams that have just been promoted, a lot of teams come to that ground and they just set up sort of two banks, almost a bank of five and a bank of four. They didn't do that. And Tottenham just couldn't find a way to deal with them. They were brilliant.
Yeah, it's not happening, is it, at the moment? But it's interesting, though. I was thinking about this one as well. Burnley's first goal shouldn't have been a corner, but VAR can't do anything about that. So they can go back miles in a move to see some sort of handball that happened, and that will be ruled out, or somebody's toes offside who didn't actually cross the ball or wasn't a through ball or anything like that. Oh, no, they can look at that, but they can't. But don't worry, they probably will. I would imagine soon they'll have VAR for every throw in and every corner and every kick. Is that what people want?
Yeah.
To get every decision right.
Well, they've got a meeting, haven't they, this week? I think the chairman and the PGMO.
Yeah, but
and,
judging
and
by Steve everybody. Parrish's thoughts, I don't think they're going to do anything about it. I don't think they're going to do other than say, okay, carry on.
Yeah. You know, the thrust of his argument was everybody sees what they want to see through
basically.
The prism of their own football club. No, I don't agree. I agree with you. I didn't agree with it on Reddit yesterday because I don't think that's the case. I mean, you get elements of that. But as I said, when you've got fans of one team benefiting from it, like it did us at the weekend, and then we applaud the team as they say, you know, stuff VAR or the equivalent of their fans, then that tells you that's not the case. We're all of us at one point during the season is going to get sawn off by it in a terrible way. And we already have been, you have been.
Yeah,
Sheffield United were the
football.
Other day.
You'll get sawn off by decisions, you know, as well as you will technology. But it's the delay, it's the thing that everyone talked about, this killing of joy, this killing of the moment.
Yeah.
And that is a big, big problem. I thought Gary Lineker was right about saying, you know, you, at least if you're going to have it, restrict the time that it takes. And if you can't sort it out, then you have to go with the decision on the field.
It was interesting. There was
Or you get the referee to go and look at it, say, look, we're not sure, Michael, we've looked at it for a minute, you go and look at it. Otherwise, it's just not going
to
work.
But there was a comment in one of the papers that says, VAR officials took almost 4 minutes to check an offside at Tottenham for this crucial decision with a game goalless. This was the 0-0. The point has been made that it was only a 46-second check for the handball by Trent yesterday. 46-second. And he's getting pilloried for that. And that seems super quick to me, said one of the pundits. So you can't win, can
you?
You
can't win
that. You're getting damned if they do.
But in the end, VAR, it's flawed for one very, very good reason why it doesn't work and it isn't going to work the way it is at the moment. It's got its massive flaw in it, which is, in the end, it's just another bloke's opinion.
Yeah.
In the end, that was John Moss's opinion. It wasn't handball. You know, and that's the problem with it. So it's not definitive. And so because you've got that situation, the referee has to be the person that decides.
Yeah. As you say, why has Mike Riley said they can look at the monitors if they want to? And you've got Mike Dean as a fourth official. You've got Michael Oliver, probably two of our three or four best referees, and neither of them look at the monitor. Mike Dean doesn't say to Michael Oliver, go and have a look at that, as well as the VAR. It's just ridiculous. They've got senior refs who have clearly been told not to do that.
It's hopeless. And also, the whole thing, the handball, or the dreadful handball rules that we have at the moment. We saw Yeremina hugging himself, desperate not to handle. It was like this, holding himself like this. You see the way I'm holding myself? And of course, he was off balance, as you would be with your arms wrapped around yourself.
Yeah.
The flick went straight to Ings. He scored. You know, that is a problem when a defender feels he has to hold his arms in like this because he don't want to give away a penalty.
But even then, it didn't stop him. I mean, he basically a rugby tackle on Gineppo in that game, and they decided not to even look at it, VAR. That push, I mean, it was a clear push, and it should have been a penalty. So, what a mess.
What a mess.
Motti will have steam coming out of his ears. It'll be interesting to get Frank Skinner's thoughts on that as well. He's obviously a man who cares deeply for football, so we'll get Frank's thoughts when he joins us.
And that's the other thing that they're getting wrong completely. The Premier League comments when they explain the VAR decision.
Yeah.
It's not going well, that, when they're going, yes, and the reason that was his arm was in a natural position. Well, it's not.
He walks around like, unless you've got a ball under under it. Not that natural.
So why? But it's like last week's explanation of the Son sending off. Don't bother to offer an explanation, really.
Yeah,
because it doesn't help.
You're embarrassing yourselves. You're making a bad decision even worse.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Well, Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport, making a welcome return to the studio now. He's been touring throughout the country with showbiz, and he's going to be bringing it to the West End, London Garrick Theatre, 13th of Jan, the 15th of Feb. Frank Skinner. Good afternoon, Frank.
Hello.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm top notch, I think. Mm. I mean, you know, for my age, I've got to be in the top. A doctor once told me that my hip-waist ratio is in the top 10% of the country.
Wow.
Is that good?
Hip waist ratio, yeah.
Oh, no, it is good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I can Fosbury flop through an unstrung tennis racket. Not touch the sides.
How old are you now, Frank?
62.
Do you find yourself singing that in? So a bit like old people used to do on quiz shows back in the 70s, where they'd say, you know, what's your name, dear? She'd say, well, I'm 74. You're 74, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
We'll get the round of applause.
Yes, I do. I talk about it quite a bit, I think.
They all applauded in there when you said 62.
Yeah, they did.
Quite right. Yeah, now that I'm not sort of on the market for relationships anymore, obviously I would have played it down.
Then, yeah, yeah,
but
of course.
As it was, I like it. I always felt I was a 60-year-old man in waiting.
Yeah.
So I feel happier and more relaxed.
As a representative of the Werther's generation, it's good. I've been reading that you're taking on this tour. You've been taking a lot of National Trust properties as you tour.
Well, not just National Trust. I've become obsessed with the Anglo-Saxons, generally speaking. So the tour, there's a parallel tour, which is famous Anglo-Saxon sites. So I've done Sutton Hoo and the Prittlewell Prince in Southend and Bede's Tomb in Durham University, etc.
Wow. Weren't you tempted, though, with Sutton Hoo to do the old football thing? Sutton Hoo? I probably not.
No.
And, Chris Sutton must have got fed up with that.
Chris Sutton was at Norwich, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he's not that far.
No. Yeah. I've done the Sutton Hoo. What's drawn you to the Anglo-Saxons?
You know what? I heard a podcast which was about a history of England, and I got to the end of the Anglo-Saxon section, and then I went back to the beginning again. I liked it so much.
What is it about them, then, that...
It's really hard to say, but one of the great things is people know almost nothing about them. So there's like three sources you can read and then you know as much as most historians. So it's a very quick way in, yeah.
Wow. Have you got a favourite top 10 Anglo-Saxon?
Have you got a favourite? Bede would certainly,
Venerable Bede.
Be up there. You know, King Alfred, obviously, straight up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like Offa.
He wouldn't have done well in Bake Off, though, King Alfred.
King Alfred, he would have been, yeah.
No,
getting a handshake from poor Hollywood.
Because they didn't have the often timers in those days.
Now, I'm at a bit of an advantage to Paul, because I've seen this show, and this is always difficult, because A, we know you, and B, it's going to come across like very crawly, but I honestly think it was the best show I've ever seen you do. I really thought it was top form, and... I told you that on the night. It was just brilliant. It was just a brilliant hour. It was a big venue, but somehow it was intimate, and the fans, everybody loved it. I mean, you must be happy with the reaction you've had from the show.
Yeah, well, it's grown to an hour and a half now for the tour. I did Birmingham on Friday night, and I was a bit anxious because I think, you know, I still think of Birmingham as a really special gig, and I actually felt a bit edgy before, and I don't really get the nerves thing. And I always think, you know, do they still love me or am I, you know, that guy who moved away? And then it's like when a footballer goes back, there's some, you know, that they love and some that they never forgive for leaving. Anyway, it was an absolute stormer and just the job. I'm still got a bit of the glow left from Friday night. So
do you tailor it I saw a review of a gig you did in Wolverhampton. You're giving the Wolves fans a bit of clog. So you're working.
Which is not easy at the moment.
No, it's quite difficult.
Doing rather well. Yeah, I think I did talk about Nuno doing brilliantly for a bloke who's still sleeping rough.
He has got that look.
I saw that. You said you hope if Brexit does go through, they'll kick the Portuguese out, which will be terrible.
Yeah, well, obviously
Wolves.
That was only in the context.
Yeah, of
course.
Of course.
Yeah, we made that clear.
I think we were all with you on that one. So, what do you make of Peaky Blinders? Where do you sit on that particular?
You know what? I've never seen Talky Blinders. Speaky thingy, Peaky Blinders.
You've never watched Talky Blinders.
Talky Blinders.
Actually, Speaky Blinders would be a brilliant chat show.
It would be, no, yeah.
I might write that down. Someone told me it was mega violent, and I'm yeah. not great mm. with mega violence. Of mm. that, I don't mind if it's aliens doing it, but if it's ordinary people yeah. doing it, I'm sort of beginning it. But I mean, people truly love it. I bet if I gave it a go, I bet I'd get totally hooked.
Yeah. As a kind of a Midlands thing, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I know a few Midlands people who've moaned about the accents, but, you know, I think you can get a bit carried away with all that.
The, what I was going to say to you, has it gone? It will come back to me.
It might do.
Carry on while it comes back to me.
Worthers generation.
Yeah, that's right. We're all the Worthers.
What are we going to say?
What was I going to say? Oh, that's right. You know, never got, you carry on until I think of it. You haven't got anything to say?
No, I've always
got. Go on, then say it then.
No, I mean, basically, well, yes.
I tell you what, I've got something. Yeah. Can I defend VAR?
Both of you have things to say. Defend it, Frank.
Yes.
Okay.
When VAR was... Let us go back many years when Paul Hawksby was the editor of a popular football magazine and he hired me as a columnist.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the columns I remember writing was about how important I thought bad refereeing decisions were to football.
Mm.
That I've been to so many games that were dull games and one terrible refereeing decision has set the crowd on fire, made it exciting and really lifted everything up. And I thought that human error, especially people... I like the idea of tremendously skilled professionals being in the hands of people who've hardly ever kicked a ball. And I feared that that all those beautiful idiosyncrasies and all that rough road would be smoothed out by VAR. And I thought it would just be perfect decision after perfect decision and that element would go. As it is, I think it's improved it. Because the decisions are as bad, but we get longer now to savour them like fine wine.
When you're standing, I was sitting the other day for 4 minutes waiting to find out whether you've conceded a goal or not, it is pretty ridiculous, really. I mean, you wouldn't want to be sitting in the Hawthorns.
Imagine Albion score and you sit there and you think, I'm not celebrating this because I'm waiting till they the other team kick off. It's not great there.
But, you know... In cricket, I love the replays and stuff in cricket, but it still spoils that celebration thing. Just imagine if when England won the World Cup, if they'd questioned that run out. So that Joss Butler moment when the Bales and the whole place, they all have to then stand around for it. No, but I don't want to lose bad decisions. I think they're important.
Would you like it then in the Championship? Would you be quite pleased to see it come in?
Well, obviously, it won't really affect us because we'll be in the Premiership.
Of course. The way it's going rather well, isn't it?
It is going well at the moment. I love the idea that they might say, you know what, we preferred old-fashioned human error the way it used to be. But I don't think, having spent this much money, I don't think that can happen, can it?
No, it's
I think
no
we're stuck. We're stuck with it.
I think we are stuck with it.
I watched Albion last week against Stoke, and Albion played well, but. It's good that Stoke won and they got Michael O'Neill.
Yeah.
That was one of the strangest. By the end, the Albion fans were giving it the big Olay, but I thought it was one of the most shockingly poor performances by a team that I've seen for a long time, Stoke. And I wonder the manager had to go.
Well, we are playing Sarri ball at the moment without Sarri because we don't really have a goal scorer. Right? We've got some fabulous midfield players and the goals are happening one way or another. But we can't keep doing that. But yeah, Stoke were in crisis. That was the right time to play Stoke, definitely. I loved it.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC.
For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Yeah, Frank Skinner is with us in the studio, and as he was just saying, he's got these Garrick Theatre gigs in London coming up at the start of next year, but you can still catch him. Edinburgh, Motherwell, Aberdeen, Watford, Cov, Glasgow, Dudley, Belfast, Torquay, Britain. You get the idea. There's quite a lot of dates left on the tour. Right there from Jersey, off to Jersey. Exactly. What's the Anglo-Saxon history like there?
That's a very good question. I don't normally plan this far in advance. Yeah. I don't know if they made the Channel Isles, but I tend to think... I can never remember. Was Letitia Guernsey or Jersey?
I thought he was Jersey, wasn't he, Matt? I think he was.
Was he? Graham Lassow was one.
Yeah,
and was Guernsey. Letitia was the other.
Oh, it could be
the
other. Sorry,
boys, they are the two great pillars of football in the Channel Islands, certainly.
You like touring, don't you? You kind of quite sort of embrace it. But you'd say you're doing it in quite short bursts at the moment, which has helped.
But if you talk to like pop stars, and not pop stars, but old rock stars, usually the reason they quit, they say, well, I love the shows, but I don't like the travel and I don't like hotels. I love all that stuff. I love motorway services at 2 a.m. I just love it. And that moment when you open a hotel room and you don't know what it's going to be like, it's great. How long is my shoehorn going to be in this one?
And the show gets promoted in unlikely ways, because I was just looking at the Doncaster Free Press, as I often do. And it said, TV funny man Frank Skinner surprises fans with visit to Conisbrough Castle.
Yes.
And so suddenly, because you're on this little Anglo-Saxon tour, you take in the sights.
Although Conisbrough, the land was owned by Harold Godwinson, who was Anglo-Saxon arrow in the eye, Harold. Yeah. To be fair, it's a bit more Norman. I slightly strayed from the path.
You'll go Norman if you have to, in the absence of Anglo-Saxon.
It was a development rather than the main theme. Yeah.
Now, it was interesting last summer, because when England started to do well, of course, Three Lions resurfaced once again, as it always will. But I saw David talking on Twitter to some bloke, I think, having a go at him, saying that the royalties weren't that great. I think it was about 87 quid or something. He had to actually put how much it was.
Well, I was interested when I read that, because I don't think I've had any. I think it's all gone to David. That's because he did a couple of interviews where he said, "Yours basically my idea," you know. But,
really?
Yeah, he's very. We had a bit of a falling out about it, actually. But I don't think I've had any royalties. At all.
Oh, really?
You know what? I'm not in it for the money.
No, of course not. Ian Brody's just got a new Ferrari, I understand.
Something's gone wrong.
And when we were doing Fantasy World Cup, Andy did an interview with one of the local newspapers, and you put that line in there, didn't you? You said something like, "Well, it's not all down to me." And you and Dave really seized on it and came in for the meeting.
The Jewish Chronicle.
Oh, it's not all down to Andy.
Yeah. You should have known that Dave would say the Jewish Chronicle. I mean, it was like, remember when foreign footballers would go home and talk to their, like, the Spanish press and slag off the manager, thinking this will never get back to England. I'm all right.
I remember I'm doing a slightly Gerald Ratner style comment to Time Out as well. That didn't play too well. Where I said,
"What did you say?"
I said, "Well, I can't use
you
the
said
language."
Some of the shows were some of the shows.
So I said,
terrible.
"Some of the shows are brilliant, but some of the parts of it are a bit." The word Gerald Ratner used, and they printed it, which wasn't ideal. Really.
I was banned from speaking to the press after that.
Well, yes,
but we always had. I remember Andy's the production day meetings, Frank, where Andy would offer himself up as a kind of sacrificial lamb to get you and Dave in a good mood by being telling us a little bit too much information about his personal relationships and just trying to get everybody on side, get us in the mood.
Do people generally know that you two produce fantasy football? They know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I remember Andy.
We've never stopped mentioning it.
Andy had a big notebook, and Andy was also, he used to do the barbecue at lunchtime. So he did. He ran the whole show.
He did, yeah.
And I did walk past his open notebook once, and I just saw written in block capitals, Cajun. ? And he'd been making notes on the barbecue as well.
I think you
also once said if the police got hold of his notebook and sort of read it, and that he'd probably be locked up.
Also, in front of Alan Jaurès, I was trying to show him something with my notebook, and you basically said, "Don't show him that, you think you're completely mad."
Do you ever watch The Phoenix's back? Do you ever revisit him on YouTube?
Do you know what? David Baddiel phones me quite often and say I was watching the Matt Letizia Phoenix or something. I never do, but
really?
Often I don't even remember. The only really things, if anyone dies who was on the show, we send an RIP message to each other on their behalf.
Mm.
But no, I don't really watch it. I mean, I don't know if they've stood the test of time.
They're very good. Yeah, they are still, you'll be surprised when you go back. Some really do. And he's in quite a lot of them in various
Britain's
roles.
Worst
the
actor.
Avi Cohen Phoenix is probably good. Right up there, I'd say, with your performance.
Thank you very much. That was one of my finest.
Yeah.
I played a ref. You were in it as well.
I was in a few, I played. I was supposed to be Gary Stevens, but I look more like Uther Joyce. In a lineup.
Interestingly, I did a gig just lately, and a bloke was in the audience, and I said something to this bloke, and then his mate said, "He's a very famous man. Do you know who he is?"
Mm.
And I said, "Well, he looks like Brian Murphy from Georgia Mildred," and it was him.
It was Brian Murphy.
Yeah, and I think he was so pleased. A, that I'd recognise him, but B, that I'd said Brian Murphy rather than, George.
Yeah,
so we had quite an ongoing thing.
They repeat that on various channels. And I tell you, that performance, those two, it's a brilliant comic performance. They're fantastic to give. They're really good. That has stood the test of time. You can see it's just real
that's such
quality.
A Paul Hawkes thing to be reviewing Georgia Milford in 2019.
No, honestly, get proper comedy chop.
On the radio show we do, we call that late review.
Yeah, it's a very late
incredibly
review.
Late review.
Now, last time you were here, you were telling us that your young son is... suddenly, to your chagrin, he's a Tottenham fan.
Yeah, good lad.
He is a Tottenham
fan. As I said, his expectation was that it was going to be all gravy and onwards and upwards after the Champions League. But
well, look, my first ever West Brom game was December 1967.
Mm.
And we went on to win the FA Cup that year. And I thought it was going to be silverware all the way. And that's the last major trophy we won. I don't think that will happen with Tottenham. I think they're going to be good. But, yeah, it has been a shock. He was very upset when Trippier went for a start-off.
Right.
Because he really liked him and he was an England player and all that. And, he's been a bit... I don't even quite believe it. But there was a thing on the telly where someone talked about Pochettino leaving and he was on the verge of tears.
Oh,
really?
No.
I don't think he's... I think he thought it would stay like this forever.
Yeah.
You know, the personnel and being in the top
three. You should have put him on the phone to me. I would have put him right.
Exactly. Uncle Porter.
Well, I keep showing him the championship table and saying, look where West Brom are. But,
do you think he might sort of
I took him to his first night game. I took him at West Brom Barnsley because night games glow on the pitch and all that, and he loved it all. But he still seems to be a Tottenham fan. I will continue to work at it.
It's good that he's not been put off and sort of flip flopped. That's very good.
To be honest, if I may, just lately he's had quite a bit of growing up things. We watched the England game when it was stopped because of racial chanting. Yeah. And I had to explain to him what was happening. It's quite a thing to explain to a seven-year-old kid. And then last week, he was watching Everton Tottenham when that horrible, horrible... And he was saying, why is Son crying and stuff like that? And, you know...
Yeah, it's
you can learn a lot watching football about life. Yeah,
that's
very
true.
I mean?
Wow. That is true. I know you like your boxing. I don't know if you were aware of the fight between the two YouTubers, Logan Paul and KSI. They fought on Saturday night.
Okay.
LA. I haven't watched it, Andy. You have.
It was
back,
terrible. Absolutely.
A lot of
terrible.
Windmilling going on.
A lot of windmilling. But I like this, which was basically. UK fans paid $9.95 to watch it, but 11,000 people logged on to see it through the reflection of a mystery YouTuber's user shade. So people just watched the reflection in this bloke's
glasses.
That's how
to
I like
save
to watch
tenner.
Sport.
That is brilliant.
That's right.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
You can honestly, watch it in ultra high definition, just high definition, or in the reflection of a bloke's glasses.
I love that. That is a prescription for success.
Oh, it is.
So we were saying that the show is called Showbiz, finally. And you're saying you've had some quite kind of low-key, fairly mundane, drab encounters with celebrities over the years. You've never really milked it, maybe, or maybe milked your own level of celebrity.
A mate of mine, I remember him giving me a speech of how he felt that he would have done a lot more with celebrity than I had.
Right.
I remember he was very obsessed with Kate Gallagher, and that fueled a lot of this.
Right.
But he said, you haven't gone to the right parties, you've never really put, you know, you haven't got proper showbiz friends. It's all David Baddiel and Adrian Child.
They'll thank you for that.
I'm sure they said the same to them about me. And I think it might be, I like it, I've always embraced it, but I've never, I think because I don't drink or do anything else, I've never really been totally accepted into the group, is what I think. But you know what? I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I always think with comedy that I'm like the hour hand with all these second hands shooting past me, but I just keep moving on my
your
on
own
my
gentle
way.
Pace.
It's still absolutely crucial to telling the time.
Yeah. Well, good to see you, Frank.
Good.
It's
Thank
always
you very much
good to see
in.
You guys. You know I love you.
Well, you can catch Frank at the Garrick Theatre in London's busy West End from the 13th of Jan to 15th of Feb. Tickets are on sale now from frankskinnerlive.com. And if you can't get into London, you can see Frank. He's still around the country doing a few gigs in Scotland this week and lots more besides, and off to the Channel Islands as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And more. Are you starting to now kind of put a light pencil through Anglo-Saxon places of interest?
Well, we're up in Scotland. We're going to go across to Holy Island and take in Bamborough Castle as well. So, you know. Top notch.
Your support act has got an interest in it as well.
Well, to be honest, I mean, he's a funny guy and I really like him, but one of the reasons I chose him, he's got a degree in Anglo-Saxon history. So that saves me having to buy the guidebook.
Yeah, he never would have thought that would have come in useful on the comedy circuit.
Exactly.
He's got this good plum gig around the country. Cheers, Frank. Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport. Our next guest was last with us a couple of years ago, reflecting on the Lions trip to New Zealand, that memorable drawn series. He has returned. He is chatting about his autobiography, Pride and Passion. Warren Gatland is with us. Good to see you, Warren.
Good afternoon.
It's pretty hot off the press, this, isn't it? Because the book finishes, or the book starts, should I say, with the third place game only a sort of week or so ago.
Yeah, it comes out on Thursday, so it's just hot off the press, really. So
yeah. How are you feeling? You've had a kind of a couple of weeks to reflect on. Just generally, how do coaches feel about the idea of the bronze medal game? Because from a distance, you sense that
I hate you in football.
Yeah, you and the boys would just like to get home, having lost the semi final.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones. It's I think our two CEOs sort of mentioned that we should have a boat race to settle it.
Yeah.
But you know, for us, it was probably a game too far. We had a 5-day turnaround. We played South Africa and that. Semi-final, all of a sudden 5 days later you've got to play the All Blacks. So it's tough mentally, you know, because you're so disappointed from giving everything in a semi-final, then you've got to play a third and fourth playoff. So probably the players wouldn't want it, but from a financial perspective and teams that are there, it's third and fourth, you're playing for a medal, so
sure,
you can understand.
The final, having played South Africa, of course, in that semi-final, did it go as you expected when you sat down and watched that game against England? Did you have in the back of your mind that that could happen?
I did mention it.
You did, yeah. Eddie slightly bit on that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I wasn't actually talking about England. I was talking about some of my own experiences. Mm. You know, just when you play sport at the very highest level, and England were unbelievable in that semi-final against All Blacks. Probably one of the best performances that I've seen from any rugby team. But to get to that level, sometimes it's you're right on the very edge of emotion. You've really got to bring so much emotion to a game like that. And it's difficult to repeat that. And having experienced that in my own coaching career, I can remember a number of years ago when I was coaching Wasps, who played Leicester in the last game of a round. The winner went through straight through to the final. It was Martin Johnson and Neil Beck's last game for Leicester at Welford Road. I completely underestimated the emotion of that. Mm. They beat us by 45-25, and we had to play a semi-final the next week against Northampton, and in the final at Twickenham, we put 40 points on them. And the same in 2013 with the Lions. Australia beat us in the second test, and I saw James Hall afterwards with tears running down his eyes and the emotion that Australia put in that second test to win it. And just remembering and thinking, I don't know if they can bring that same sort of emotion for the third test, and we didn't play as well as we could, and we were the team that brought the emotion. So it's very, very difficult. So I was looking back at experiences. 2011 Rugby World Cup, when we played France in the semi-final game that we should have won. Yeah. New Zealand played Australia. They played Australia in the semi-final, put everything into that, and just struggled to beat France in the finals. 9-8 that score, and France were very unlucky. So I was just kind of reflecting back on sort of experiences and things that I'd seen in sport, and was saying, you know, just got to remind yourself that a performance like that, you've got to be able to repeat it the following week.
Eddie Jones took a little bit of stick for saying, mate, I don't know what went wrong. We just, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Did you have a little bit of sympathy for that? Because there was no shock about the way South Africa were likely to play. You knew they were going to play like that. You just had to counter it, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were very similar to us in that semi-final when, you know, 6 or 7 minutes to go, when it's 16-all, I thought we were going to win that semi-final. And a very simple game. They just come off nine, box kick a lot, and you've just got to be able to handle it. And they bring physicality to that game. And obviously England did that in the semi-final. But in that final, South Africa were very, very physical, and they did a good job and stopping Ben Youngs from dictating the game, and that probably paid a big difference. And I'll tell you, the thing about it afterwards was going to the awards dinner on the Sunday night and to hear Siya Kolisi, the South African captain, speak about how important that win was to South Africa as a nation. I kind of sat back and went, actually, this game's more important than just a game of rugby. It was how important that was to a nation, and you kind of thought, well, well done to them. And if it does make a difference to South Africa and them as a nation, and obviously politically and culturally things continue to improve, and then I think it's been a good result.
Yeah.
It was the same for Japan, wasn't it? Being the host nation with the terrible weather and tornadoes, but taking something from the performance of their national team.
Oh, absolutely, and that was inspirational. And seeing Japan get to the quarterfinals, I thought was something really special.
They played some lovely rugby.
They played some beautiful rugby, and it was great to see. And it's always great for a host nation to go through to the next stages, because then the home fans really get in behind and support the team. And in fairness, I think 99% of the tickets were sold at every venue. The hospitality we had was amazing, and the country really got behind it. And I think it's brilliant for the game to grow the game. And probably the next big country to take this to would probably be the USA at some stage, because I think it would make a massive difference in that country as well.
Countries are generally pragmatic. I mean, you mentioned Japan, what a lovely rugby they played, and England against the All Blacks. Does it matter how you win? Does it matter that South Africa proved to be the best team, but playing this kind of pragmatic, physical rugby?
If you talk to coaches,
well, that's what I say.
I don't think they really care how you win. You know, it's about. I find it interesting watching, you know, football and hearing football fans sometimes, and their team punches above their weight and sort of finishes fifth or sixth or seventh in the table. But then the fans get bored of that and want them to play attacking, stylish football, and then the following year the manager listens to that and they find themselves in relegation zone. So it's a, you know, it's a tough one sometimes for the expectations of fans. And yes, we're playing a game where it's an entertainment game where we've got to think about that, but it's also a professional sport's also about winning. Yeah. So yeah, it's just trying to get that balance right.
Having said the this World Cup is covered in the book, Pride and Passion is your autobiography, and you take us right back to your childhood and tales of playing rugby in bare feet when you were a kid.
Yeah, the heavens. My father took me down to the local rugby club when I was 5 years of age, and maybe Saturday mornings waking up to frost and bare feet. And those days in New Zealand, you never got a pair of boots until you're about 9 or 10. So for the first 4 or 5 years of playing rugby, it was every Saturday morning in bare feet, and kind of that's where it all started.
Yeah. You say as well, every kid wants to be an All Black. You know, it kind of sums up just how all-consuming rugby is in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think it's changed from where it was, where every local town, the rugby club was the centre of the community, and everyone went down there and supported the local team on the weekends and had a few drinks at the bar afterwards, and that's the way it was. You know, it's definitely changed since then, but growing up, you know, that's what I wanted to do, and like I can remember, you know, every sort of playtime, lunchtime, playing rugby with my mates at school, and it's quite strange to see, because you, having lived in London for a number of years, you'd see my son, he'd be playing football at lunchtime, and you go to New Zealand and kids aren't kicking the football around. No. If they haven't got a rugby ball, then they've rolled up a pair of socks and they're playing touch rugby or something like that. So, yeah, just culturally it's different, and that's the way it is. And, you know, it's definitely the national sport, and kids aspire to wanting to be All Blacks.
You wonder about the role of the haka as an All Black, and you say the first time you pull on the jersey, you're more nervous about getting the haka right than you are about the way you're actually going to play in the game.
Yeah, that was a terrifying week, because I spent all that week in my room at night after trainings practicing the haka, because on the Friday night before your first game, then the new boys have got to do the haka in front of the older, experienced players. And, you know, like I was so nervous about that. I wasn't worried about the game. We played, I think it was Western Australia, was my first game for the All Blacks in Perth, and we won that game comfortably, but it was nerve-wracking having to do that haka and make sure you get it right, because they can be pretty critical if you make a few mistakes.
Did you like Eddie's V formation? Do you think that was quite clever? Or?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, because weren't they saying that it was supposed to be a semicircle and ended up being a V formation?
When you're talking about creating a W for Wales.
We spoke about that. We laughed about that. So, look, it's the way the huck is a challenge. It's a challenge about really questioning your sort of your manhood, your ability to you know, they're going to want to rip your head off, basically. The kind of, you really take it back to basics, and so the thing about accepting the haka or the challenge is to stand up to it. And I thought England did that admirably. And anyone that I spoke to, and you spoke to Steve Hansen or any Kiwi, I mean, you're entitled to accept the challenge how you want. And the fact that they did a different formation, there's nothing wrong with that. And I thought, you know, for some of the All Blacks, it was kind of a little bit off-putting, but, you know, fair play to England. They did that, but they followed it up with an unbelievable performance. It's probably one of the best rugby performances I've seen for a long, long time.
Yeah. The book's very interesting on your coaching career. But did you always expect to be a coach? Did you always see yourself after your playing days going into coaching?
Probably. It wasn't something that I thought about until I sort of looked back on my playing career. I was captain of a lot of teams when I was growing up, sort of a 12 or 13 year old playing representative rugby in the Waikato, and then captain first 15 and captaining schoolboy teams and club size. And probably as a result of that, having a closer relationship with the coaches that I was involved with, I just naturally went into coaching, and then became a sort of a player coach at a really young age. I was sort of 24, 25, had toured Wales and Ireland with the All Blacks, and then end up staying on as a player coach with a club side in Galway called Galwegians, and then went back to New Zealand, was a player coach as well, and the game went professional 1995, and you know, I got offered a full time professional contract and had decided to retire, and that probably gave me a big advantage over a lot of other coaches, because I got into coaching at a very young age, sort of when I was 30, and in a professional way, and I was fit enough to carry on playing. If I'd taken the full-time contract, I may have played for another 4 or 5 years. Yeah. So probably always was going to be a coach.
When you look at players, do you think, future coach, you kind of get that sense? And have you ever got that wrong? Have you ever looked at a player and thought, well, he's going to be a massive coach, and for whatever reason they've gone down a different route, maybe media or something like that?
Yeah, I think for some players it's about being analytical in terms of understanding the game and not just your own role. And often the best players don't always make the best coaches because they don't know why they're the best players. They're just naturally good. And the players that have had to work hard at their game, they think about, you know, what they need to do to improve the game and look at other aspects. So, a lot of players, like I said, who are great players don't often make good coaches. And the players, you know, I knew what it was like to sit on the bench for the All Blacks. I sat behind Sean Fitzpatrick for a number of years and never got on. But, you know, I think that gave me a massive advantage in terms of understanding the game, looking at myself.
So you kind of watch more rugby than you ideally wanted to from that position.
Yeah, but also, understanding about how to handle disappointment.
Sure.
Because the hardest thing about coaching is the coaching is the easy part, but the thing I find the most difficult sometimes is when you have to deliver that message about players missing out. Sorry, you haven't been selected in the squad, or you haven't made the 15, or you haven't made the 23, and that doesn't get any easier.
No.
That's the hardest part. So, you know, when I talk to a player about missing out on a side of not being selected, you know, I know what it's like having been through that on a number of occasions myself, but it still doesn't make that any easier.
Well, I enjoyed the book. One, it's a lot of personal stuff we've not got round to kind of you telling your story, so people should pick up a copy out on the 14th. It's in hardback and published by Headline, and lovely to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
It was interesting to hear Roy Hodgson, Andy, talking about superstitions, that he tries not to be superstitious, but that he got a few still out there. He said, in my first year at Halmstad's, he said, as a coach, I wore the same jacket, same shirt, the same underpants. And I'm thinking,
unfortunate.
If he's still wearing the same underpants, he was at Halmstad's in 1976, he's wearing 43-year-old underpants. They're going to have to be buried in a lead-lined box, aren't they, when he finally sheds them? But wow.
No, not good, really. It's a shame our producer, John Cadigan, is away. We can't celebrate Maidstone's giant killing of Torquay.
Oh, OK. Well, he chose a good week to not be around, really, didn't he? Yeah.
Hammered him on that, but there you go. A bit of a Johnny Nash on this story. Hold on, where is it? It's a little sun one. Let me see. Oh, yes. Steve Morrow paid 75p for two hens, but misread the ad and got 1,000 in Hamilton, New Zealand. You think, not Steve Morrow, the bloke that used to play for Arsenal,
exactly. I wouldn't think so.
Why would you get 1,000 hens for 75p? That seems incredibly cheap.
Yeah. Is that a joke?
No.
By your standards, that's pushing it a bit.
It's not a joke.
Oh, no, it's not coming cheap. Dean Hoyle, the former Huddersfield Town owner, lovely touch by him. Can you imagine your chairman, or even ex-chairman, doing this? He turned up at a pub outside Brentford's ground before last weekend's match, Martin Ziegler tells us in his column.
Four of them to choose from.
And sorry, he has. He had one in every corner. That's which one do you go to? And put £850 behind the bar for drinks.
Wow.
Nice touch. He said, it's my way of clocking off. He sold his majority share in the club earlier this year. He said, I did the same thing when I bought the club 10 years ago. I think some of the fans may have stayed in the pub for the whole afternoon. But what a nice touch from the chairman. So imagine your old chairman going into the local pub and sticking £850 behind the bar.
Who? Roman Abramovich.
You'd call him a skinflint if he did, if Roman did it, wouldn't you, really?
It seems unlikely.
That was that great quote of the weekend by Jurgen Klopp, talking about how everybody had to be on it for Liverpool to beat Manchester City. And that line he said about even the guy selling the hot dogs will have to be in top shape. I'm thinking, have you seen the blokes who sell the hot dogs?
They're generally not.
If they're basically sampling their own wares, they're not normally in the top of most of shape, are they?
And well done to ultra marathon runner Nick Butter, which sounds like shoplifting, but it isn't.
Yeah.
It was a tremendous achievement by him.
Yeah.
He was run 100, how many was it? Marathon in every country, 196 marathons, which is unbelievable, really. So well done to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can't see why I did.
I bet he's fun to have a pint with. This is a couple. I bet they're fun to have a pint with. The occasional
3-2-1.
Yeah. They have collected 600 small ceramic dusty bins from the long-forgotten TV show 3-2-1. Ask your granddad,
he was quite
kids.
Cute, Dusty. He was probably the best thing about the show, really.
But 600?
He was a bit like Mr. Chips. He was like a forerunner of Mr. Chips,
yeah,
I feel.
I mean, that's fairly dated now. They have brought that back, haven't they?
Celebrity catchphrase.
Why haven't they brought back 3-2-1? It was an incredibly convoluted game, wasn't it, really?
I never understood it.
Odd. You could never understand the clue.
No, it was aimed at a kind of, you know, the ITV sort of audience, you know, general audience. And yeah, it was a really complicated bit of, you know, quiz, but I never understood it. But there you go.
Apparently, in the David Walsh's column yesterday in the Sunday Times, talked about these medical practitioners' tribunal service meeting with Dr. Richard Freeman. But amongst it, he said that he had a bit of a feeling they were trying to take everybody's eye off the ball by talking about Shane Sutton's erectile dysfunction, who I remember seeing on the old Grey Whistle Test in about 1976.
They were very good.
I think there was one of the faces was in there, quite possibly. One of the spiders from Mars. It was that kind of band, that sort of era, but they were very, very good. Anyway, Friday. So you got one more.
News of a refreshing new drink taking Japan by storm.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Onionade. It's apparently just like lemonade, but it's made from onions.
I don't like the sound of that. Onionade sounds like some kind of benefit concert for people in the onion industry.
It's true.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport. Don't ask me
to leave it out. I've struggled to pitch these questions right, Andy. Andy's got to get 5 out of 5 on last week's shows. We spoke with goalkeeper Charlie Granger on Friday. Which team does he play for?
They were playing... Dulwich. He plays for Dulwich.
He does play for Dulwich Hamlet. That's right.
Okay,
just for a minute, Andy. I thought you were going to blow the first one.
Sorry.
We spoke to a Scotsman with two surnames. That's not unusual. That's quite common. He's an octogenarian runner. Mackie was his surname as a first name.
Yeah. He tried the vapor flies, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah, yeah. No.
Not Curtis Mackie?
No, that's not very Scottish, is it? Curtis. He's called Curtis. Crawford Mackie, that's right. Get these out of the way. We spoke about Sonny Bill Williams joining which rugby league side?
Toronto.
Toronto what?
Well, not Raptors, that's the bus. For goodness. Toronto.
Wolfpack, that's it, you got that. Lurpack. We spoke to Russell and Ed from Editors. They came in. Which two football teams do they support? Can you remember? We talked about both their teams.
Villa.
Yeah, that's one.
And Ipswich.
Yeah, good work. And we had a chat to Maurice Hamilton about Lewis Hamilton winning the US Grand Prix. Where was it run? What city?
Austin in Texas.
Austin, that's right, yeah.
Cool.
Brilliant.
Not bad. Four out of five. Not good.
Not good. Obviously.
It wasn't.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show.
What a thriller, though.
We'll probably get lots of Scottish people called Curtis now getting in touch. Are you part of the Curtis clan? Is that the Curtis Tartan?
Hopeless.
Anyway, that's us. We'll be back tomorrow. I think what exalted guests we've got coming in tomorrow. Who knows? We'll see. Anyway, thanks for downloading us.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.